This is the Freedom Fiend, broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker. So, Bill Buport, this is Michael Dean. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, I'm just going to, what do you think, what if we just played John Philip Sousa marches for 2 hours?
Oh, that'd just be torturous.
It would. Yeah, what did you say? It was kind of funny when I was listening to stuff last night. I like this guy. I don't care about the, we're better than you kind of component of all his music. And he was part of the, like, U.S., it's all patriotic stuff. He was part of the U.S. Marine Band, and he writes for the U.S. Marine Band. And this is the U.S. Marine Band playing it. I really like John Philip Sousa. Don't hold that against me, but yeah, the thing that comes up on YouTube when you watch John Philip Sousa videos is you might also like, and it's like, you know, Soviet national anthem orchestral music. And what did you say about that kind of stuff?
Well, I just said that all you're doing is just celebrating patriotic bloodletting.
Yeah.
That's what it all comes down to.
Yeah, and the Russian music is more heroic and stirring. I'm not saying it's better. I'm saying it sounds more heroic and stirring. To me, Phillips...
It certainly is, but the Russians have a penchant for that.
Yeah, Phillips kind of sounds like he's thumbing his nose at everybody. Like, his music sounds like, neener, 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 we're better than you.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. All right, so this is Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster, broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker. We are the most powerful, we're the most popular show in the Tri-Yard area. And we are also the leaders of the State Deprogramming Network. And we don't come to your house and kidnap you and yell at you in a room and not let you sleep to deprogram you. We do it with love, but we do it with firm love. This is tough love. About getting over the worshiping of the icons of tyranny. And on the other end of the inner tubes, we got Mr. Bill Buport from ZeroGov.com. How are you, sir?
That would be me. I'm doing great, and I'm ready for another 2 hours of philosophically terraforming the planet, one disobedient surf at a time, with the estimable and loud radio voice of Michael W. Dean.
Loud, loud, coming through a DBX 1066. And I'll be reviewing that unit in Talkers Magazine this week from talkers.com. You can go look at that when it comes up. But, you know, if you're subscribed to the Freedom Fiends World Empire of RSS feeds, you'll know. You'll just know. It'll just show up. You won't be able to stop it unless you unsubscribe. So, yeah, man. So what do you want to talk about today? You have an idea.
I do. I'd like to talk about stoicism. I'd like to talk about the failed launches. And we're going to talk about holy moly in the second hour, according to you.
Oh, either that or I'm going to play... to an hour, the second hour, just John Philip Sousa marches while also playing light opera. I think that'd be a good combination.
You know, short of broadcasting some of the execrable soaps that are on television for the second hour, I think that would be the greatest way for you to lose audience on the world.
Yeah, I think it would too. There's a show I like, despite that it's got a kind of very status premise. It's Parks and Rec. You ever seen it?
You know, I haven't seen it, but people have compared me to their libertarian guy that they have on there.
So. Ron Swanson? Yeah.
That's right.
Well, he is a tough guy, man's man, libertarian, although unlike you. Well, he works for the government, but you used to work for the government. You were an officer in the United States Army. Isn't that correct?
You're correct, and you insist on bringing that up on every show.
Oh, you did it, man. You compared yourself. I wasn't going to do it today, but you compared yourself to Ron Swanson, and I was thinking, like, you know, manly man, check. Libertarian, check. Outdoorsman, check. Someone you'd like to have a beer with, check.
Or scotch.
And yeah. I think he's the one. I think there's a Ron Swanson meme that says, like, you know, this is a man's breakfast, and it's a picture of, like, bacon, eggs, whiskey, and a gun. I was like, well, he works for the government. You don't. And I'm like, oh, wait, you used to. I can bring that up. You were an officer in the United States Army.
Hold on. We all work for the government, Michael W. Dean.
Not me, dude.
You run a plumbing contractor service, if you do anything in your little burg where you're at, in the great state of Wyoming, or I do anything here in Arizona, or anybody does anything in the 50 states, they will render 55, 65, 75 cents of every dollar they take in the front door of their business to some government entity at the local to federal level, and they will not be paid for the collection service, and a boot will put on their neck, be put on their neck, or worse if they refuse.
Hey, speaking,
so we're all government employees.
Speak for yourself, but yeah, I guess you're right. Speaking of the difference between Wyoming and Arizona, what challenge did we have? We had a challenge today of when to do the show because Wyoming and every state except Arizona gets their government tax rebate of 1 hour of time that was stolen from us back today. That stuff's really hard for me, man. It's hard enough for me to get up on the weekends anyway because I'm a night owl, and I do this show Monday through Friday, 12 hours off of this. I do it late at night for the insomniac, unemployed, underemployed weirdos who have different brain waves late at night. So that's a good show to do. But yeah, man, so Arizona, where you live, doesn't celebrate daylight savings time or the removal of it. So we had to figure out, like, wait, what time is the show going to be tomorrow for you? So basically, like, and we have these atomic clocks, radio clocks that, like, sync up with the government in Colorado somewhere. And, you know, they're accurate to, like, the hundredth of a second, and they automatically update. And they automatically update for daylight savings time, but there's no switch on it that says, I live in Arizona, don't update my clock, darn it.
And, but by the way, the market has delivered that atomic clock to technology for me for $15.
Oh, yeah. And you can go to creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com and search clock, and you'll get the two different actually, they're both around $18 right now. It's kind of like the stock market. The prices of atomic clocks goes up and down, but it's generally between $15 and $22. And you can get that on Amazon. There's a big wall size one, and there's a little round one that's steam proof for the bathroom. And I have one of each. So when I'm taking breaks, I can know when to run back and get on the microphone and keep talking. Because apparently us talking is so important that if we stop for 6 seconds, alarms go off at our network. And that's true. So what's stoicism, dude? I don't even know what that is.
You know, stoicism is it's a very interesting creed, the most practical philosophy I think that's out there that's been around for about almost 3,000 years.
Wow.
Now, the aspects of stoicism I think are quite good for current consumption because what stoicism does is it says, you know, your span of control and who you are as an individual and your character is your fate. It goes through all these sort of mind-bending things in a 21st century fashion that says, if you think that you can control the world, you're wrong. But if you think you can control yourself, you're right. We've seen people like Gandhi. We've seen people like Mandela. We've seen people back in the Greco-Roman times where the emperor said, fetch yourself to my court, to which a Stoic would reply, I'm not coming to the court, to which the emperor would reply, then I shall have your dead corpse dragged to the court. To which the Stoic would reply, you will have my dead corpse, but you will not have my consent. And while character is fate, I will consider my own fate, and I will be the captain of my own destiny.
They sound like more erudite classical sovereign citizens.
I just don't think that there's a lot to be said for sovereign citizens, in my opinion. I'm not sold on what they're, because basically what sovereign citizens are saying, and I'm probably going to alienate some members of your audience, sovereign citizens are saying, I'm going to use the present system that I object to convince robed government employees that I'm right and they're not employees of the government. And because of the superior evidence that I present in my lucrative rhetorical skills, the robed government employees will be starstruck by my performance in the courtroom and they will grant me my sovereignty. Not happening.
Yeah. Yep. So tell me more. I'm intrigued and wish to subscribe to your newsletter.
Certainly. This is Bill Buper from ZeroGov.com, right?
Yes.
What Stoicism comes down to is four great teachings, and they can be summarized as a quest for virtue, and they are the sole human good. It's the understanding that external goods do not amount to human happiness.
As they say in Fight Club, you are not the contents of your wallet. So go on.
Indeed. Yeah. Because in the end, you know, we come into the world naked, we'll leave the world naked. Will either decompose or be burned up. Because remember, if you teach a man to build a fire, he can stay warm. But if you set a man on fire, he'll stay warm the rest of his life.
Oh, I don't know if we'll be burned up and leave, because I have a theory that the government is working on life extension systems so they can keep you alive to serve those 22 consecutive life terms that they're giving out for free speech coming up soon.
Not only that, that way they can tax you more.
And torch or torture you.
That's right.
Both make money for the government.
So I want to go over those four things real quick so I can get it in your audience's mind about what they are.
Yep, I'll shut up. Go ahead.
That would be the quest for virtue as representing the sole human good, the understanding that external goods do not amount to human happiness, what you just said, the belief that a good life strives to control emotions to enhance reason, and the conviction that virtue consists in knowing what is in one's control and what is not. In other words, span of control. I think, and I'm writing a book on this next year, Michael, I happen to think that Stoicism may be sort of like the ancient root philosophy of what we currently call libertarianism, especially anarchism.
Yeah, well, that statement you started with sure sounded like a no-government man to me.
Well, it certainly does.
I will not bow before your will.
You know, it's like there was a Greek poet by the name of Aeschylus, and he said, "He who learns must suffer, and even in our sleep, pain which cannot forget falls drop by drop on the heart until, in our own despair, against our will, comes a wisdom through the awful grace of God." Now, you don't have to be a religionist to necessarily subscribe to that, but what Stoicism tells everybody on earth is that there's no such thing as a moral economy, and there's no such thing as life being fair. Life is unfair. And what that means when I say there's no such thing as a moral economy, there's no such thing as a moral economy outside of the character that you possess yourself, because you're the one who determines that, or you're led by others, if you allow it, to determine what your virtue and morals will be.
Who are some well-known Stoicists?
You know, remember 1992 when the Independent ran for the presidential race. I can't remember his name now. He was a multi-gazillionaire.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but, that guy.
Yeah, but James Stockdale was his vice presidential nominee and eventually his vice presidential candidate. He is probably one of the foremost Stoics who actually practiced that when he was a prisoner of war in the Hanoi Hilton.
Ross.
And he said he owed it to his study of Stoic philosophy.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Freedom Fiends. So, Ross Perot, that's the name you were looking for.
That's it.
The third-party billionaire who bought his way into actually at least getting to sit in the debates with George Bush the first, King George the first. And
hey, one minor correction, Clinton. Per your correction though, Michael, yeah. They all buy it because would you spend billions to control trillions?
Yeah, but they don't usually buy it with their own checkbook. They usually buy it with other people's money, and it's a receipt for, there may come a time when I need a favor. It may never come at all, or it may come in the middle of the night.
It is truly the mafia. There's no doubt about it.
All right, so we're talking about Stoicism. Now, is there a relation, before you go on more, and I think you probably can and should say a lot more about Stoicism, because I'm not positive you've really identified it yet for people. Let's go ahead and really nail it, what it is.
Well, you know what? What Stoicism really comes down to is a recognition that we all come into this world with only one thing that we have going for us in our relationship with other human beings, and that's our character and our reputation. If we wish to be sociopaths, psychopaths, and people who take advantage of others in a fashion for which reputation be damned, and we don't care what character we possess as long as we get all the material possessions or the power that we wish to get.
It sounds like you're segueing into our hour two discussion, but I know you're not, so go ahead.
You mean holy moly. Indeed.
Yeah, that guy.
But what this all comes down to, if you strip it down, it means that you are the captain of your character, and if you wish to do good works and good things and have other people recognize you as being somebody who could be relied upon, that is the good aspect of Stoicism. And there's a lot of great stuff out there on this. There's almost like a renaissance, or as the English would say, a renaissance of interest in Stoicism. You've got Ryan Holiday, who did a great podcast with Tim Ferriss, where he talked about this. He came up with a new book called The Obstacle is the Way. William Irvine wrote a book about the joys of Stoic living. But you can go 2,000 years back and you can get Epictetus, you can get Seneca, you can get Marcus Aurelius's Meditations and read this stuff for yourself. But if I may recap those four tenets, it's really rather simplistic, but I think it speaks deeply, is that there's a virtue, and virtue is the sole human good. The understanding of external goods do not amount to human happiness. The belief that a good life strives to control emotions to enhance reason is virtuous. And that the conviction that virtue consists in knowing what is in your span of control. Those are four tenets. Now, of course, those four tenets can have various penumbras and branches that come out of those for which you can try to perfect your life. But Stoicism is terrific because it shows that in the end, as I said in the earlier segment, Gandhi said when he went on the Great Salt March, I'm going to go in the Salt March and you can beat the starch out of me as the British occupiers, whatever you wish to do, but you will never have my consent. You will always have my refusal, and you can have my body, but you'll never shackle my mind. Stoicism, I'm convinced.
Who said that?
It was Gandhi.
Okay.
Now, I'm paraphrasing because Michael Collins said something similar to that.
Well, that's kind of funny,
too. If your audience looks up Salt March under Gandhi, they'll find it.
That's kind of funny, too, because you can lock up my body, but you'll never take my mind, a variation on that. Nima Vidati used to like to say a lot and always attributed to some rapper. And, it's one of those conscious rappers, the ones that read instead of just talking about partying and bling and shooting people.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure,
so, that guy was probably paraphrasing Gandhi and maybe Michael Collins, but more likely Gandhi.
You know, we could do an entire podcast series or spend a whole lot of episodes talking about this.
Radio. You forget it's radio. We're on 33 stations right now.
And that's great. All I'm saying is that a podcast series, in addition to radio, would be a great way to examine these kind of issues.
Because you can study it later. It's like books on tape they used to have. Yeah.
But then again, Michael Dean saves all of these broadcasts for posterity at the Freedom Fiends.
Yeah, freedomfiends.com. Is there a relation to Stoicism and nihilism?
You know, remember that nihilism is the sense that you are the most important person on the planet and you're usually psychopathic or sociopathic to the extent that either your existence is only ratified when you're in the presence of others or that you don't care who you step on to get to where you have to be. That would be nihilism.
Because I think you're inaccurate there, and we're going to have to get you, I wouldn't say to debate, but to discuss that with Nick Hazelton, our 16-year-old wonder kid who's getting school credit to occasionally be on this show.
Call me on it, because I'd love to discuss that.
Yeah, yeah. Nihilism doesn't, the word is misused. Okay, you saying that is the same as saying anarchists want to break things. It's a misuse of the term. It's the common use of the term, and it's not the original use of the term. It's not the real accurate use of the term. It basically just means that morality is not absolute. It doesn't mean you have to act like a sociopath because of that. We'll be back.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows. My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF. Because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. When I needed a robust and secure home business computer network for my radio show, I hired QPG.us. QPG.us did a great job with a complex custom setup and did it remotely over the internet. Whether you have one computer or 1,000, QPG.us can set up your small business network, no matter where in the world you live, fast and at a reasonable price. QPG.us is a liberty-loving company that can also help you with networking, domain name registration, DNS, email, SSL, VPNs, and more. That's QPG.us.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Freedom Fiends live talk radio musical extravaganza, and here Bill has a request.
I've lived a life that's full. I traveled each and every highway and more, much more than this. I did it my way. Regrets I've had a few, but then again,
have you had a few regrets, Bill?
Oh, we all do.
Yeah. You like this song. I wanted to play the Sid Vicious version, but you insisted on the Frank Sinatra version, so it's better. It's classier.
The Chairman rocks. I like The Chairman.
Yeah, yeah.
I just like Great American Songbook. I think that that is probably one of the most lyrically sensible and beautiful periods of American music between the 1930s and 50s.
Have you seen the anti-socialist meme going around? It's Frank Sinatra's face, and it says, I did it my way. And it says, no, comrade, you must do it our way. It's the social contract.
The tacit social contract.
Yeah, I didn't sign that.
You and I haven't signed off on.
I did not sign that. Yeah,
I didn't either.
And Barack,
I never got the memo.
Barack Obama is a liar. He's a socialist, and his feet stink.
And this is Bush's fourth term.
Yeah. So
just so that we're equal opportunity offenders, whether you're a follower of the Democrats or the grand old Politburo.
So speaking of things the government gets in the way of because that's their business model, let's talk about private space travel. What happened this week?
Oh, it's been so disappointing this week because I'm a huge booster and fan of commercial space because
you're a booster
I think
rocket. No, you're a rocket booster.
That would be me. But I think commercial space really could get us out of what Arthur C. Clarke would call the cradle and eventually maybe give us those little libertarian statelets, you know, on the moon, on an asteroid, or wherever the heck we'd find them. But an Antares rocket carrying 2.5 tons of supplies to the International Space Station was destroyed by the operator because the rocket was off course.
You know, as John Scalzi once said, libertarians are bitter that they're not the illegitimate child of Ayn Rand and Robert Heinlein, and they're all currently punishing the rest of us for it. So punish us, Bill.
And those who haven't read Heinlein's The Moon is a Harsh Mistress are in for a treat if they haven't. That, if there's any libertarian opus out there that's really accessible to why libertarians think the way they do, that particular novel is very instructive.
I liked Glory Road. But I only like the first half of it. I love Heinlein's books when they're taking place on Earth in this dimension.
Farnham's Freehold was good, and so was A Stranger in a Strange Land with Michael Valentine.
Yeah, and I actually read that in the hospital it takes place in while being paid to do pharmaceutical testing when I was a homeless punk rocker when I was 18 in Washington, D.C. I went to Bethesda, Maryland, and yeah, yeah. You know, the first paragraph or first sentence or two of Glory Road was extremely influential on my journey to liberty. I read it around the time I was really starting to question everything. And the first line of that was, I was 18 years old and couldn't decide which party to vote against.
Because you wanted to establish just what your preference for evil was.
Or no, it's kind of a lesser of two evil, but thinking you have to vote statement, I think.
You know, you're always doing this to me, Michael, where you take us on a segue of a segue of a segue. In this case, I must mention Eric Frank Russell, one of the Golden Age science fiction authors from the 1950s, penned a great little novella, or maybe short novella minus, like a short story called And Then There Were None. And here's the pricey. It's real quick and easy. There's all kinds of planets out there that are settled. There's one that's settled by humans that hasn't become part of the Federation, as it were, because we all have to remember that the Star Trek is the fascist Federation flitting about the universe, violating the prime directive every episode. In this case, they send a rocket full of 1,000 bureaucrats, soldiers, and administrators to this planet.
Well, good.
They get on the planet because what they're going to do, of course, is they're going to take it over. They're going to occupy it. They're going to draw their taxes. They're going to tell them what to do. But they discover that everybody on the planet, sort of like the Book of Kaifo, leave your hands off of me, that F. Paul Wilson talked about. They're all my job, which means mind your own business. Because what the bureaucrats were doing was they were going to people and the people would ignore them. They wouldn't even acknowledge that they were doing, they'd be behind their plow or whatever the case may be. Well,
what if they gave a law and nobody listened?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's precisely what happens in the story, is that the troops start to disappear. They start to desert. The bureaucrats start to desert. And in the end, there were none.
Well, I'm all for shipping bureaucrats to another planet. So let's jump on our Segway and ride down to the SpaceX compound and talk more about that. Bill Buepert from ZeroGov.com.
So apparently, I don't know whether the unmanned rocket that exploded, deliberately exploded, by the way, because they destroyed it because its flight termination wasn't correct. I can't remember whether that Cygnus cargo was related to SpaceX or not. So I'll leave that to the audience to figure out by reading what the Communist News Network has, or Faux News, whatever the case may be. SpaceX, Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic Enterprise, he lost one of his spacecraft, not in space, of course, but on a test run at one of his facilities. I think one person was killed as a result of that. What really made my head explode, pun intended, with this whole thing, was Time Magazine, of course, comes out with an opinion piece by Jeffrey Kluger called Enough with Amateur Hour Spaceflight,
ew,
in which he's saying, oh, a fatal accident in the Mojave Desert is a lesson in the perils of space hubris. Space hubris.
Well, wasn't there a rocket, U.S. government rocket, that blew up on the launch pad? Wasn't there the Teachers in Space one where it blew up shortly after launch?
Yes, 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 yes. But remember, what's good for the government is not good for the rest of us. You know, anytime they say, well, who's going to build the roads? And all the developers who make all these sub-developments and build these housing complexes and stuff across the fetid plain, they build their own roads. They build them on time. They build them under budget. Why? Because they have a discipline of price and they have a discipline of profit. They have to do that. Why does government always seem to build roads that are wretched? Well, that's because they don't have profit. They don't have a price signal. And they don't have an incentive to do the right thing. They have an incentive to do the wrong thing.
Yeah.
So that made my head explode when I read where they were saying, we need a law. And that law would be, we need to make it illegal for commercial exploitation of space. We need to leave it to the big boys in government. Come on.
Yeah. You know, I was a big fan of NASA when I was 5 years old in 1969 and sat with my dad in the living room and watched that. And no comment. I don't want to have that discussion. But, you know, the thing that I didn't realize is government. Okay, let's put on our minarchist hat for a minute and pretend that stealing money at the point of a gun to do good things is a good idea, which it's not. Is your minarchist hat on, Bill?
Or it is. I just put it on, and it crinkled like tinfoil.
Yeah, I thought you couldn't find it last time. You'd misplaced it.
Well, I couldn't, but I kept it aside for this show because I knew you'd talk about it.
Okay. The space program basically just all it really was, I think, was a funding and research and development program for drones. That's what it led to.
You know what? There's probably a lot of merit. And by the way, I had the same kind of fascination when I was a toddler with the government space program. But it also goes in line with what I contend about all collectivists on Earth today. They are the adult toddlers of the world. Because that's the way they view the world, as adult toddlers.
Yeah, even the scientists. And something I've noticed that's inordinate among scientists as well as science groupies, which has always been around, but it's really strong now, of like young people that really don't do any science. You know, as someone said, it's the same people that sit around and talk about how science, how cool science is, and how the scientists are the hero, the real heroes, and then, you know, pull out their iPhone to calculate the tip at dinner after they're done talking to it. You know, they can't even do that kind of math in their head.
That's right. And that, nor do they have any scientific expertise to speak of or anything like that. But I have to say, in full disclosure, I'm something of a science groupie. I really dig it. You know, I was turned on by Carl Sagan when he did his original Cosmos. The latest variation of that is just terrific stuff. And I love science, but I think science has largely gone off the rails because of government funding. I think when science is harnessed to the market, it tends to do a whole lot of very interesting things. And exhibit A for that is what's going to happen in Colorado and other places that have legalized or decriminalized marijuana. Watch what the free market does for THC delivery systems. Watch what vaping has done.
Well, if the government doesn't, the government will get in the way, you know.
Well, or R.J. Reynolds.
Yeah, which is the government. I mean, you know, it's fascism. It's in bed with the government. It's corporatism.
Mussolini-style state corporatism, because big business, for the most part, can't exist absent big government to coddle it.
Yeah.
I agree.
That's so square. Yeah, but as far as science groupies, there's a thing, there's a phrase I coined. It's people who are experts in things that are wrong. And I see this in science a lot.
That would be every politician, by the way.
Hell, it would too. And it would be every a lot of science groupies. And it would be, you know, holy moly, who we're going to discuss in the second hour. And it would be, you know, a lot of armchair people without any classical training.
Well, look at the climatologist nonsense. You know, the UN just came out with a report where they said, and this is Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, he says, you got to phase out fossil fuels by 2100 or face irreversible climate impact. I'm here to tell you, they don't have a clue. This morning, we had some very cold temperatures here in southern Arizona that are very atypical of what we've had in the past. And my wife told me that there are parts of Tennessee, I think Gatlinburg, that got 22 inches of snow, which is just unheard of this early in the season.
Okay, and I'm going to...
Much less the volume.
I'm going to put in the same personal disclaimer as I did when you started talking about alternate theories of Ebola, which is I don't really have a decision either way on the is climate change human-caused, which... It infuriates both sides because both sides are absolutely right. What I will say is I don't know enough about it. And the data has so many agendas behind it, as we found with the ClimateGate emails. Basically, the environmentalism movement of the 60s, which is a good thing, got co-opted into basically an attempt at socialism control and everything.
You know, I agree with you because I think there's a third way. And the reason I think that is because when we look at scientific empiricism, you can have correlative data values and you can have causative data values. Causative is a bar of evidence that is far more difficult to prove.
Yep. So people are expert in things that are wrong is when a scientist has an extreme amount of knowledge in one narrow field, they think they're qualified to give opinions in every other field of science and especially in how society should be organized. And they're wrong.
Annelids.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squigelts from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you.
We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
This is Mr. Michael Dean, the lead singer in the rock musical extravaganza known as the Freedom Fiends. And we got Mr. Bill Buford from ZeroGov.com. And
that would be me.
This is the end of the first hour. We have another hour after this, but we like to have each hour be kind of self-contained. And this is a teaching hospital moment here. We explain what we're doing. We show the man behind the curtain on the Freedom Fiends. And we like to have redemption in the third act in each hour, as well as a bigger one at the end of the show. Because, that's kind of how like three-act storytelling goes, and we don't have to adhere to that, and we often go off the rules and break the rules and smash them and dance upon them, but we like to see what we can do with them, so, because they kind of work, you know, they're kind of based, some are just kind of based on like, how things tend to happen, and then some of them are artificial contrivances of screenwriters and storytellers going back to the Iliad and the Odyssey that, we're just used to them, so... Bill, what's your redemption in the third act of the first hour?
You know what? The most important story that Michael Dean and his Freedom Fiends and me and all the other co-hosts and even audience members tell is the fact that if you wish to be in control of your own life, you don't need an iPhone. You don't need any accessories. All you need is what you were born with, which is your will to do the right thing, your character, your honor, and your worldview, whether it be collectivist or individualist. And you stand against the world, or you stand with the world, or you stand with your neighbors, or you stand with your friends and family. But you can do the right thing if you simply take the decision to do it. Now, it isn't always painless, and it doesn't always yield rewards. But if you want to do the right thing in this dash mark on your gravestone between the time you're born and the time that you die, that's all up to you, and it doesn't take a dime to do it.
Wow. So what I was born with, that would be my body. In my mind. So
your mind, your soul.
Are you saying that if I walk around naked, I'm more free than your average neckbeard hipster with an iPhone?
No, I'm saying that's your decision entirely. But if we look at great men in history like Michael Collins and Gandhi and Martin Luther and others in ancient Greco-Roman times in the West, you'll find people who stood up to power and they said, we're going to speak truth to tyranny, even if it costs me dearly, even if it costs me my life. But at least I will die with my character intact.
Doesn't the wiser man run away from fights? I'm not saying I believe that, but I've heard that.
You know what? You just got to pick them. And I do, you know, it's sort of like falling on your sword. There's going to be an appropriate time to do it, and there's not going to be an appropriate time. For instance, with friends and family, if somebody comes to your house with grave and evil intent to do you harm, you can't really run away from that fight. But if it's a fight like Gandhi's salt march, he took a decision where he said, you know, all of us are going to get battered. Some of us may be maimed and some of us may be killed. But the greater good of this individual motive to do this, is that I will free my progeny and future generations to live a life that's richer in freedom and liberty than mine is today.
Tell me more about this salt march you've been discussing. You mentioned it a few times.
So the salt march, if your audience would look up Gandhi, and of course this was characterized in the movie that was done on Gandhi, which I highly recommend people watch, even though there was a lot of artistic license and ahistoricality given to it. What he did is the British said, you know, we're going to tax your salt. Salt was basic to everybody. So it was a tax that was imposed on everybody in a very regressive fashion.
It was the Obamacare of its time.
It did, or National Socialist Healthcare, which I like to refer to Obamacare as.
Well, I don't, because let me interject there. National Socialist Healthcare, at least you can see a doctor and not have to pull out your money now. It's taken some other time. I'm not saying it's good, but Obamacare isn't that. Obamacare is you must buy health insurance.
You know what Obamacare really comes down to, since you segued the segue, is what it comes down to is they're trying to zero out the insurance company so that the government will step in and say, you know what, we need to adopt a single-payer system because the mess that we created is such a crisis, we're going to come in and unscrew the mess that we've made by making the government do it.
Yeah, the government's basically doing what the terrorist heroes of the movie Fight Club were trying to do without the bombs. They were trying to blow up all the credit card companies to get everybody's debt to zero. And I think the government's trying to use the healthcare system to get everyone's debt to 100%.
Analysts.
But that'll look like zero because it'll be equal. All right, man. We'll be back for hour two of the Freedom Fiends, where we'll talk about Stefan Molyneux and some cult watch people's opinion on him and his lack of science while pretending to be a lover of science and truth and knowledge and beauty and Plato and other ancient men who like to hang around with young people like Stefan Molyneux does. We'll be back.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Talk radio musical extravaganza. I am Michael Dean, the lead singer in the Freedom Fiends. Well, the Freedom Fiends are the most popular show in the Tri-Yard area. We are disindoctrinators, deprogramming you from the cult of the state. And my able-bodied assistant and, well, we'll let him be the leader this time on this cult deprogramming of the state episode is Mr. Bill Bupert from ZeroGov.com. Are you there? Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
That will be me, and I'm here with Michael Dean, philosophically terraforming planet Earth, one disobedient servant at a time.
Yep, and what are we talking about this hour? I can't even say
you
the
wanted
name.
To talk about
No, Molyneux. You wanted to talk about Molyneux.
I
always want to talk about Molyneux. Freedom Fiends, Molyneux all the time. But you have avoided the topic. Now, before we go into it all, I'm bearing the lead. Good afternoon, Amarillo. Amarillo is the one station that plays us 1 hour a week only and joins us for the second hour on Sunday. So I'd like to welcome Amarillo, Texas. But I want to talk about this guy named Stefan Molyneux, Stefan Molyneux. Stefan Molyneux is a guy that we like talking about because we don't like him. He is the 900-pound tumor in our otherwise wonderful world of libertarian and caps and voluntarists and no government men. You know, those people that are so small they want. We think that people who think government should be so small they can drown it in the bathroom are big government people.
And thanks, Dobby.
We want a government. I said that. Dobby said, we want a government so small that it's theorized about by particle physicists. But so we're talking about Stefan Molyneux, who runs something called Free Domain Radio, which is nicknamed FDR. Now, why would you start a libertarian community and name it after the most socialist U.S. president ever, FDR?
Isn't that a curious turn of phrase?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe he didn't notice when he started it. I don't know. But the reason we talk about this guy is because we want people to know that this guy does not represent libertarianism. He does not represent us. And a lot of people outside the libertarian community assume he does. They think, oh, I read in Time magazine about this guy, Stefan Molyneux, so that must be what that stuff is. No, man, we don't like him. Bill and I don't like him. A lot of people don't like him. I would say something like 50 or 60% of libertarians despise the guy and everything he stands for. And, you know, probably 30% of them don't care either way. And 10% of them kind of like him and have checked out some of his older videos when he was making good videos and think he's pretty good. And, you know, 5 to 10% of libertarians out there, like, kind of work. I don't know if it's 5%, but the guy has 200,000 followers on YouTube. And there are people that worship him and literally run their life around him. And that's what we're warning about, because we're not going to say he's a cult, because he has threatened to sue anyone who's called him a cult. Now, think of, just marinate on that for a minute. I mean, think about
if is he going to use the state to do that?
Yeah, and he says he doesn't. He says you should never involve the state in anything, yet he issued DMCA copyright notice, takedown notices on something that wasn't even a copyright violation, on this woman named True Shives that was making critical videos of him. But he and his partner, Mike DeMarco, did some kind of like bait and switch in a couple, in an interview and a post, where they said, oh, that channel that was taken down was giving out private information of people and saying horrible things about them. That's conflating a different channel that was taken down that week by them with the True Shive channel, which was just Molyneux in his own words, you know, the crazier stuff that he said cut out of 2 and 3 hour podcasts. This guy has like, I don't know, 2,000 or 4,000 video podcasts and audio podcasts out there. Now, another thing he does is he's kind of doing this 1984-ish memory hole thing, where not only does he ban people on his own forum, which it's his right to do, it's his property, but he bans them if they even ask tough questions about his so-called philosophical system, which is full of holes like Swiss cheese. But he also is going back, and this is his right to do too, but it's really kind of suspect, is he's editing things off his website and editing things out of previous podcasts. Like, there is a podcast we played an episode from last week. His wife is a therapist in they're in Canada. His wife is a, you know, licensed therapist under the Canadian healthcare, government healthcare system, and has clients in her home. She has an office there, like a lot of therapists do. And he said on a podcast that he used to listen from the next room through the vents. And then when the patient,
creepy.
Yeah. And then when the patient, was at a spot where they couldn't figure out with psychiatry an answer, he would yell through the vents to like check out his website, and the answer was there. A lot of people came on after we mentioned that last week. A lot of his followers, his minions, his memory hole bots came on our forum and tried to tell us that that was a joke. And he does train his army of minions to be like antibiotics searching for the virus of dissent. Here's the thing. If your philosophy is solid, you can ignore dissent. You don't have to try to actively destroy it.
Hey, I need to say this, Michael. That is my primary disagreement with Molyneux, is the fact that he seems to actively go after dissenters. He doesn't brook discontent.
Yeah.
He'll take people off of the forum. He won't respond to questions. I mean, cross-examination is the engine of truth. You and I have had disagreements on The Fiends. I've had disagreements with some of the other co-hosts. You know, by the way, that makes for very interesting radio. It makes for very interesting conversation. And it also teases out, well, who does have the superior evidence? Well, who is right? If you don't allow people to see the other side or another aspect of the prism that surrounds this philosophical construct you're putting together, I think in the end, you really are a charlatan.
Yeah. And he tries to get people to leave their families, which is definitely an indicator of cult-like behavior. And he pushes donating money to him and studying all his podcasts very hard. And he has a Sunday call-in show where he solves people's problems, or, you know, tries to, which you can't do in 2 minutes. You know, if somebody calls you, he actually has said he and his wife were big fans of Dr. Phil. And Dr. Phil, that makes sense, because Dr. Phil has been censored by his licensure board, which Molyneux's wife has been. And Molyneux's wife was involved in FDR early on and then got censured by the government and then stopped publicly being involved, but may or may not still be, you know, behind the scenes involved. But he went back and like scrubbed every reference he could find in his media that she'd ever been involved. So I want to read a little bit from this site, freedomofmind.com, which is a cult. I wouldn't say deprogramming, but it's a guy named Steve Hassan, who is one of the preeminent experts on cults. He is a former member of the Mooney cult, you know, the Unification Church, and he left it and became someone who helps people get out of cults. You know, and he actually used to do the kind of scary kind back in the 70s when it was the style of the day where families would pay people to kidnap people and deprogram. He has been involved in that in the past, but he's since definitely, you know, says he doesn't like that or doesn't like, you know, believe in that anymore and people should not do it.
But you be sure to put that in the show notes, Michael?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The link,
yeah.
Yep. It's freedomofmind.com. So let's read a little bit of, he has a database of cults and high involvement organizations, which are things that may not necessarily be cults, but demand your full life and, you know, that you change everything to them. So let's see, for Freedom Man Radio, he says, are you looking at there's behavior control, information control, thought control, and emotion control. Let's read a few from each. Do you have it up?
Indeed. Yes.
All right. So behavior control, the leader and followers are certain that everyone in the world is repressing child abuse and needs to face it. If friends and family are not on board with this theory, they should not be associated with. The association of members is not directly controlled, but most members become deeply involved and drastically change their behaviors. Listeners are encouraged to bring their problems to the leader during Sunday morning call-in show. There is a high level of social pressure to agree with the group. Members are praised for their bravery and intelligence when they defoo, which means leaving your family, and excommunicated when they are critical of the group. And there's a lot of buzzwords in this, like defoo, which is, you know, indicative of certain types of groups. Read some of the information control ones, please, there, Bill.
Sure. Deception. He lies about his critics, framing them all as child abusing internet trolls. Now,
that's
mind you, we are reading directly from this website, so it isn't necessarily attributable to Michael or I. We're reading what this guy, who is a professional deprogrammer, has put up here, and the guy has dealt with a lot of these kinds of organizations.
Yeah.
There was also a recent controversy with his therapist's wife, who at one point hosted a series of FDR broadcasts called Ask a Therapist. One day, all the podcasts, including her, were removed. Apparently, she had been found guilty of misconduct by the Canadian Board of Psychologists. By the way, for your audience, this is also where the Joe Rogan Experience had asked him directly when he was with Rogan. He's there in the studio with him, or maybe on video. And actually, Molyneux lied about it to Rogan, and Rogan did not like that at all.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was in the studio with him. He traveled to Los Angeles to do some interviews in his studio.
And there's extensive use of cult-generated podcasts, books, and videos. And I think what the author here is trying to get across is that there's a whole lot of reinforcement through various media means of a single meme for someone to take up when it comes to defooing from one family and joining this family that has been erected instead.
Yeah, and Dr. Phil, who is a hero and inspiration to Stefan Molyneux and his wife, they've said that, was also found guilty of misconduct by his board of licensure. And both Dr. Phil and Stefan Molyneux now say, I'm not practicing therapy. I'm just talking to people and listening to them. But go on camera regularly and invite people to bring their problems and listen to them for 2 to 4 minutes and then tell them to make drastic changes in their life, which you really can't do, man. You can't listen to someone for that short amount of a time. And you, even a reputable therapist can't do that.
I think he violates some basic conundrums here in society.
Yeah. All critics of his work are dismissed. A lot of manipulative black and white thinking is present. We're going to be back with more on Stefan Molyneux in hour two of the Freedom Fiends. Oh, Molyneux, all the time.
listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
After this,
he really is an eminence priest.
He's an eminence priest, yeah. And we're just talking, because that's what we do on the Freedom Fiends. We never stop talking. This is Michael Dean on the Freedom Fiends talking to Bill Buepert from ZeroGov.com. We're talking about Stefan Molyneux, the 900-pound polished turd sitting in squarely in the middle of the liberty movement. And there's kind of an emperor's new clothes thing going on. A lot of libertarian people won't talk about him. They're afraid of bashing him for various reasons. One is because there's a lot of people in liberty that want to be really popular, and they're afraid of losing face in the movement, and they think that by going after somebody like this, they will lose their chance at making a living at blogging and being feisty about liberty. Now, I don't feel that way. Literally, like, I don't quit my day job. I do radio 7 days a week, but I still have a day job. I still do tech writing. I'm not dependent on this forever. You know, we get a little advertising here and there. We don't lose money, but we barely make money. And I'm not in this for the money. And we have lost more listeners than we've gained talking about Molyneux. And I've been accused of that my Molyneux tirades are an attempt to, you know, bring in controversy and bring in listeners. But no, it's had the opposite effect, and I don't care. I'm going to keep doing it because I think this guy needs to be exposed. And you know what? Exposing Stefan Molyneux could bring about world peace, Bill. It takes a village to expose Molyneux. I've heard Molyneux bashing from anarcho-capitalists, anarcho-communists, Republicans, Democrats, Christians, atheists, feminists, and men's rights movements, guys. I've even seen them all get along on the same forum and hold hands and expose Molyneux together. It's such a unifying act.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to read a little bit more. Oh, there is a forum I'd like to recommend. It's called FDR Liberated. And again, that's not the horrible president. It's Free Domain Radio, which is Stefan Molyneux's online. I won't call him a cult. I'll call them a high maintenance group that attempts to get you to turn your life and your understanding over to them and a lot of your money. But FDR Liberated, that's FDRLiberated.com, is a really good resource for finding out a lot of stuff on Molyneux going back 10 years. And people post things all the time on there about this guy. So,
well, you know, this whole business of saying that Molyneux runs a cult or whatever the case may be, since he has decided to use the state to shut down True Shibes, and True Shibes has instituted a countersuit, all this may come out in the discovery process in the American legal system. Why don't we simply leave it up to the American legal system to determine if, de jure and de facto, it is a cult or not?
Yeah, that's. I don't know if I trust their answer on it, and I don't know if it'll necessarily be addressed, but a lot will probably be revealed in discovery about the whole organization in general. So let's read a little bit more of the thought control assessment on freedom of mind. freedomofmind.com, which is a cult deprogramming organization website that has a page about a lot of different organizations that are cults or cult-like. And we're calling this one cult-like because I don't really know what the legal definition of a cult is, if there is one. So let's see. Thought control. He suggests you either love your family and have nothing but good thoughts for them, or you feel immense obligation, hatred, and boredom for them. He frames childhood, collective childhoods as all bad, the government is all bad, and religion is all bad. Well, we frame the government as all bad on here, but we don't say that you need to leave people in your life who still believe in the government. We'd be sitting in rooms without a lot of people around us if we did that. Lots of loaded language and catchphrases, like everyone knows everything about everyone and against me. Heavily demonizes parents. Here's the thing. The group claims science and reason as its highest ideals, but they are extremely closed to criticism. What does that say to you?
What it says to me is that the scientific method is all about contemporary inquiry and interrogation of a given subject of examination that can change over time.
Yeah, one of the reasons that it's so irking to hear this guy talk, he's very charismatic, and he's done some videos that were solid back in the day, but it's really irking to hear him talk and just go on his whole thing, his holy-molier-than-thou thing, Stefan Molyneux, because he makes constant comments about truth and purity and ethics, and then he makes up his ethics as he goes along. And his thing about truth and science, and he's an atheist, he also thinks that if you teach your children religion, it's child abuse, and he's on record saying that. He's also on record saying that without him, the world would have to wait 2,000 more years for this new information. But he quotes things as science all the time. He's a big fan of science. He's a science fanboy. Like, he was talking about the difference between men and women, and he said, you know, there's a species of lizard out there. It does push-ups to attract its mate. And you know what happens if the lizard, if they give the lizard steroids so it can do more push-ups? It does push-ups until it dies. Okay, that study never happened. There is a lizard that does push-ups, but that science fact is from the movie, the TV show House, the medical drama, and it's made up by the writers.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Do you believe in free speech? Jay Raven had her True Shives YouTube channel taken down. We believe this censorship was wrong, and we believe the channel is a clear example of free speech. Many people are bullied on the internet, but Jay Raven actually stood up to the bullying. She has filed a self-defense lawsuit against the individuals who took down the channel. The outcome of this suit could be very important to the future of free speech. Learn more at trueshibes.com. That's Tango, Romeo, Uniform, Sierra, Hotel, India, Bravo, Echo, Sierra.com. Trueshibes.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Extravaganza. Michael Dean talking to Bill Buepert from ZeroGov.com. Now, we're going to play a little clip here of David Gordon, who's a good guy, being interviewed by Ben Stone, who's a really good guy, who's one of the co-hosts on this show, the Bad Quaker from BadQuaker.com, about Stefan Molyneux, the guy we're talking about, who is, I think, is a snake. What do you think of him?
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, let me qualify that. I think his lack of being a gentleman in the way he approaches people who disagree with him, I just think it's the wrong way to go in this minuscule movement towards liberty that we have.
Yeah.
Because you should always allow cross-examination, and you should always allow people to express questions and try to answer those questions, because everybody's going to get better educated as a result of countenancing that kind of interrogation.
Yep. So Stefan Molyneux wants to be remembered by the ages as a great man, as a great philosopher, you know, like Plato or Socrates. And he wrote a book called UPB, Universally Preferable Behavior, which is his kind of take on morality and philosophy and his, you know, his
unified field theory
of the world. I was just going to say that. Yeah. Yeah. And this book was immediately discredited by a bunch of libertarian heavy hitters, like, you know, people who are 75, who've been in the movement, you know, since the 40s or 50s, who helped define the movement. And one of these cats is David Gordon, who is the kind of heavy hitter that Molyneux wants to be remembered by. And somebody sent David Gordon this UPB book by Stefan Molyneux. Probably, I'm guessing Molyneux had someone send it to him, like to try to get a blurb, you know, like, oh, he'll love it. He'll see how I've cracked the code and gone the final mile, and people will remember me, and maybe he'll do a blurb for the second edition. David Gordon was not amused. He thought it was horrible. Now, David Gordon, let me give a little bit of his CV here. He's an American libertarian philosopher and intellectual historian influenced by Rothbardian economics. In his Reason Foundation Reason papers, they've described Gordon as a philosopher and intellectual historian who is deeply influenced by the Rothbardian strand of economics. Now, he's not only deeply influenced by Murray Rothbard, who is kind of the grandfather of American anarcho-capitalism. He was really good friends with them. Like, they hung out every day. He was his, you know, first or second best friend. This guy is a heavy, heavy hitter. He's an academic. You know, he works at the Mises Institute. He's a fellowship at the Mises Institute. And, you know, it doesn't get much more authoritative in liberty, if that's a thing, than David Gordon. So here's David Gordon being interviewed by Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, in 2012 about Stefan Molyneux. I'm going to play this clip.
You took a bit of heat not long ago. You reviewed one of Stefan Molyneux's books. And the and I can say that safely on this podcast because I have run off most of the rabid Stefan followers. But you took quite a bit of heat for your comments on that. I read through both of it. I was comfortable both ways. But
oh yes. Well, what happened there? You see, I just come across. Someone sent me this and said he'd done a short book on ethics, very short. And said, would I look at this? And I wasn't really familiar with him. He was a broadcaster, and I'd seen some of his stuff. I didn't agree with the certain things, like his seemed to be anti-family, rather. I didn't think his views on religion were very good, but I hadn't really encountered him very much. So I read the thing, and I thought it was just terrible. So I said that I really didn't like it. I thought he just made all sorts of mistakes, and it turned out he has quite a lot of followers, and they tend to think very highly of him, so they were really letting me have it. I mean, one person called me a jackass, and another one said I look like a pedophile, and then he had various of his followers, but it seemed to me that he and the followers really didn't grasp the arguments at all. I mean, the one statement, and I regret in my original review, I said, well, he's not stupid. I think he just has a kind of a facile intelligence. But if I had to write the review over, I'd take that out. I mean, I think he is pretty stupid when you come down to it. I mean, he does speak in a very eloquent manner, and but I mean, he's something like a trained parrot, if you ask me, or even if you don't, for that matter. I mean, his followers kept saying, would I debate him? I mean, I wouldn't want to do that. I mean, I have no more interest in doing that than debating a clown.
Oftentimes, debates are more based on, you know, presentation and vocal qualities and how good you can march around and impress people with your, you know, appearance.
Oh yes. Well, I think when I heard parts of a few of his YouTube presentations. He's certainly much better speaker than I am, which isn't saying much. But I think listen to him, I think of Disraeli, I think, said about someone in 1871 in a campaign speech. He said that this person he was talking with was inebriated by the exuberance of his own verbosity, and I think that's very true of Molyneux.
Inebriated by his own verbosity. That was David Gordon 2 years ago talking about stuff on Molyneux. What do you think of that, Bill?
I think it's very revealing, and like you and I were talking about earlier, David Gordon is one of the graybeards in the libertarian movement in the Austrian school, LouRockwell.com, his association with Rothbard and such, and he has a lot of gravitas. And when a man like that, who is a gentleman by the way, when he comes out and starts even employing ad hominem argumentations, I think it's time for people to stand up and listen.
Yeah, because, you know, ad hominem,
2 years ago.
Ad hominem is not a fallacy if it's true.
That's correct. I wonder if that would make it ad hominem if it were.
Yeah, and Justin Raimondo, who's a very respected writer for antiwar.com, just recently came out and called Molyneux a fascist and a huckster. So you've got some of these libertarian bigwigs and academics and really respected people, you know, saying Molyneux, the emperor has no clothes. And it's interesting, the people that seem to be defending him are the kind of less known people that kind of look like they want to be libertarian rock stars or academics or taken seriously.
Yeah,
they'll defend him without looking at the evidence, and then they'll get kind of slammy and ad hominem if you try to point out politely the truth. And I think it's a couple things. Ben Stone said it's partly that we're all so used to getting piled on by people who don't believe in liberty that when somebody piles on someone in liberty, people assume automatically that it's false, that it's just someone who doesn't know what they're talking about. And the other thing is, I think it's like trying to protect their career. And I have no desire to need a career in liberty, because I am smart and have not quit my day job and don't plan to.
Well, bully for Rothbard and Gordon, who have made a career in liberty, but it's just like actors in Los Angeles. For every successful actor, you know, you've got 20,000 aspirant waiters who were in LA who want to be actors. Same in the music industry. You know, making money in liberty, I run ZeroGov.com. I can't make a living in liberty.
And you're popular. I'm not trying to. You're popular too. Yep. And
not as popular as Molly. And Molly really has given it a good try trying to do it, but it turns out that he did it in less than a gentlemanly fashion. But one thing I want to make sure we do here is that what has Molyneux done that has stood the test of time? I'll give you an example, A History of Your Enslavement.
Yeah, he's kind of like a one hit wonder. That video and a couple others from, you know, years ago are great and they're solid.
I think it was great. And then he started the Truth About series and they just make my head explode.
Yeah, that's just link bait to bring in the general public. And they're not the truth about. They're all called, you know, the truth about Ferguson or the truth about Ebola.
It's Molyneux's interpretation of the truth about something that day.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah. And his donations are way down. He's complained about it ever since he did this copyright attack after saying he's anti-copyright, doing a copyright attack on True Shibes. And that's bit him in the butt. There is a lawsuit filed in federal court in Southern California pending against him. So
I really think that discovery process is going to be something to watch.
Yeah, with popcorn, with a truckload of popcorn.
Indeed.
What else are your thoughts on the man?
You know, I don't want to get an ad hominem attacks. I don't want to spend time saying that he's a bad guy, he's a good guy, anything like that. I stand by my primary admonition against him, which is that all of us, to a certain extent, are intellectual explorers, especially in the liberty movement, in which we've traveled down a road. We've journeyed through our evolution. You know, I wasn't always an abolitionist or an anarchist or a libertarian. I've had a long, hard road to get there with a lot of knocks. It's just like Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark. He's on the submarine, and he says, it's not just the years, honey, it's the mileage. In the libertarian world, we all go through that. So my primary beef with Stefan, who had a big impact on my oldest son, who had a big impact on me because it was my oldest son who helped me cross the anarchist Rubicon from minarchy and libertarianism, is that once you start saying that critics or people who question you or people who question your authority or people who question what you're coming from or where you're coming from or what you're about, if you refuse to face that head on, especially if they're substantive comments and questions, I think you're going to lose a lot of your cred and your gravitas as a result of that. You and I argue on The Fiends, and I think that's great. You and I have misgivings about positions that the other one holds on occasion. Like, I think that your musical tastes are questionable. You think that some of the things that I say may be wrong. I remember a half hour I spent with the estimable Derek J on one of The Fiends broadcasts in which he defended voting and I did not. We have those conversations. By the way, people dig it because that's part of human storytelling.
The fact that I like bad music by bad people does not harm anybody, though.
It does not.
Voting can harm people, and telling people to leave their family, even if they're not what's classically considered abusive, is harmful. And you got to know this about Stefan Molyneux. Most of his fans, I would say the middle of the bell curve of his fans, are largely young males age 15 to 22. And
wow.
I've watched videos by a lot of them, which led me to tweet the other day. Ever since YouTube, there sure are a lot more teenagers telling me how the world works. And that was inspired in particular by one that was like an 18-year-old kid with no confidence sitting in an empty apartment with nothing, who just left his family because Molyneux told him to, like telling me how the world works. It was funny. I feel sorry for those guys, though. Those are victims, man. We'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Freedom Fiends. Redemption in the third act. Last segment of the show. Talking about Stefan Molyneux. Libertarian. He's known for being libertarian, but he's kind of gone beyond that to where he just talks about pop culture now and his version of philosophy and truth. So I think that the thing about these kids that get into Molyneux and defend him like they're defending their family and leave their family and, you know, send him like, you know, work flipping burgers and send him tithing as much as they can of his money, tithing or whatever. He doesn't ask for tithing, but he hammers pretty hard on donations and he lives in a mini mansion. I mean, he's a pretty, you know, upper middle class Canadian guy. And he hammers at these poor, broke teenagers to send their money and yells at people if they only send a couple bucks because that's all they have. He's done that. I think what's happening with a lot of these kids is that they've never encountered true philosophy before. They've never encountered critical thought before. And they come across this kind of perverted version of it done really confidently with a lot of verve and excitement. And they think it's the real deal. What do you think,
Bill? It also speaks to teenage angst and anti-authoritarianism in a way that they probably haven't encountered before, and he can leverage off of that. Speaking of which, I just want to read something that's a slight segue from that concerning daylight savings time, because we were talking about that. When told the reason for daylight savings time, the old Indian said, and I quote, "Only the government would believe that you could cut a foot off the top of a blanket, sew it to the bottom, and have a longer blanket." But anyhow, on to Molyneux, we all have to learn from mistakes. And one thing that really irritates me about this entire controversy, besides the fact that they don't brook discontent and they excommunicate people who question the simplest things, is you cannot be expert in everything. And if you proclaim yourself to be expert in everything, you are an expert in nothing. Especially if you're video recording this and you're making these podcasts and everything, because people can hold you accountable because you put yourself out there in the public realm. So for him, let's suppose Michael and I are having a conversation over lunch and we disagree with each other. No recording is done. No harm, no foul. We haven't really influenced each other. We've made the other guy feel bad for himself or whatever the case may be. But he's putting these podcasts out there, and quite literally in the court of public opinion, he's saying, "There, it's out there. I stand by it." And then he goes on the Joe Rogan show and he says, "Oh, no, I don't talk about DFU too much." Come on. And Joe Rogan had done his homework. He knew about defunding. He knew about True Sheeps. He knew about the DCMA. He knew about all this stuff.
DMCA.
And what does Molyneux come on? He comes on there and he says, "Yeah, no, I didn't do that." And come on.
Yeah. And we did interview on the Freedom Fiend show. We interviewed two members, former members of Molyneux's inner circle. He has, he has his general YouTube audience that just check him out and they're like, "Yeah, that's pretty cool." Then he has people that are active on his forum. And then he has different levels, and he has a level called philosopher. There's like silver level, gold level, philosopher king. And you can basically buy a philosopher king membership for $500. But of the philosopher kings, you know, the couple hundreds of those he has, he picks like about 10 to 12 of them at any given time and has them like over to his house and has them do extra work. And it's the people he truly trusts and believes and says what he really thinks that he won't say to the public. And we did an interview that I'll link in the show notes with two of the former members of his inner circle. And it was quite elucidating, particularly that he says things different to the inner circle than he says to the general public. Like to the general public, he says, "Oh, you should only leave your family if they're absolutely abusive and you seek consulting therapy together. And then in the inner circle, he says, that kind of therapy is useless. That kind of conversation is useless. You just leave them. And on the outside, he has said, oh, I've only ever told one or two people to leave the family. And on the inside, it's hundreds, if not thousands.
You know, do you know how many people have left that Philosopher King circle? I heard some stories about dozens leaving.
High attrition rate, yeah.
Okay. What, so does anybody have a clue on whether he has suffered donations and stuff where it's really fallen off the cliff as a result of this controversy?
He has said on his show shortly after the DMCA and then the interview with the Inner Circle people, he has said that while begging for donations, he said, the donations are down. Also, one of the wonderful things about Bitcoin is you can actually check how much donation he's getting from that one wallet on Bitcoin. And he currently has about $140,000 US worth of Bitcoin sitting in that one wallet. Who knows what he's getting in other, if he has other accounts or what he's getting via PayPal or people handing him cash. But yeah, the guy's doing pretty well for himself. And I guess the redemption in the third act is question everything and run away screaming from anybody who says you can't question them.
And question obedience.
Question obedience, even if it's from a libertarian leader. That's an oxymoron.
Annelids
and worms. Thank you, Bill, for your service. Bill Buepert, zerogov.com is your website.
Always an honor.
Oh, mutual, man. Worms.